From the Roots Up. CIUT 89.5 FM. Toronto.
Hello, welcome. This is the Tater Report, CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto. I am Phil Taylor, your host. Today we're going to be talking about the obvious, the tariffs, and what it all means, maybe the larger movements of the plates on the planet Earth, the political plates are moving. We talked about this in the past. I want just to point out that what is happening in Eastern Europe with the fighting in Ukraine, and there had been the earlier activity in United States bombing Yugoslavia for the fun of it and forgetting that it had done so. There is a vernacular expression for it is that the great powers are moving the furniture. And some of us are the furniture, as it turns out. So we're going to be talking about that a little bit. And at a halfway point today, about 11:30, we're going to speak to Brendan Stone, Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War, also very active in labor politics, struggles against racism, and all the issues that affect Canadians, and particularly in Hamilton. Want to catch up with is, since there's an election unfolding, there's some pretty dramatic developments in Hamilton. There's a lot of what you don't ordinarily see in Canadian, I'm going to call it bourgeois politics. There seems to be considerable rank and file disquiet and movement, and that has to do with, again, with the great powers moving their furniture and causing disquiet in the population around the globe, actually. A lot of it focused on Gaza, the Palestinian issue, which has become very unsettling to people because they're not finding Canadian politicians very receptive to speaking up and trying to do something to prevent the fighting and the loss of life. And therefore, we're seeing more political activity. And so in this case, there's been a couple of nomination meetings, that one of them for the NDP, and the other was the nomination of Sarah Jama. Her name is going to be on the ballot, I believe, and we'll find out about that. So we're going to call that the drama of Sarah Jama. And it's really important. So I hope you will follow that as I can, and I'll say it's going to be at 11:30. We'll be talking about it. The most important matter, of course, facing Canadians is the new reality of the nature of the relationship of Canada to the United States. Canada has always been and thinks of itself, clearly you can see that from our leadership over the decades, as the America's sidekick, in one of the members of Five Eyes with the big badge and always patting the great leader, American, whatever their name is, always patting them on the back and saying, yes, sir, we're there, we're with you. And now the sidekick has received a kick. It's interesting to watch the political scramble around who will be the leader, who will step forward as Captain Canada. It's amusing that Doug Ford would be thought of in that regard, because so far his language is, and I'll repeat it several times, I hope, vassal talk. He said, we're your best friends. we're not like Mexico. One of his proposals, I haven't heard him repeat it. I think he would get booed if he did, because as the people are starting to boo the U.S. anthem at sporting events, he said that we should be Fortress AMCAN. That was his concept, Fortress AMCAN. So negatory on that, as the feedback was from Washington. Well, nobody answered him, of course, because they don't speak to him. They don't know who he is. They don't know his name. They know the name of Smith, of course, because she would be the American representative, the governor general, if they want to go down that road. Our leading politicians so far are reacting like somebody once said, a duck that's been hit on the head with a spoon. They're going in many directions, and it is clearly incoherent, politically incoherent, because they can't conceive of being outside the Anglosphere, the original notion, which has been from the beginning of Canada, we have what you would call, and I think it was Winston Churchill called it, the Anglo-American Empire. But with the new leadership in Washington, there's been a dissonance has developed. And Canadian political leaders really they don't have the vocabulary or the ability to think as outside the American box. And so that's where we are. Again, I'll use this term, it's vassal talk. Clearly, we could take our lead from our brethren, if I can use that term. The president of Mexico is certainly one of our leaders. I hear that Trump is going to be talking today to the president of Mexico. He says he is. I don't know if she'll take his call. Depends on her mood, I think, because she's not a pushover, and she doesn't belong to the Anglo-American Empire. And matter of fact, people of Mexico fought that empire, and they were, while they lost territory, they were not defeated, and they have a long history of resistance to the notion of U.S. hegemony. This is new territory for Canadians, but she sets a good example, President Sheinbaum of Mexico. One of the things I really urge Canadians, all listeners, to do is follow her. Listen to what she has to say. She has it. You can find her on the internet and on Twitter, and you can follow the Mexican media to know what they are thinking, because the same tariff is being thrown at them, on them, as Canada. So we need to know what a fighting president of Mexico is saying. Just as last week we discussed the president of Colombia. And incidentally, talk about vassal thought. All media here made fun of the president of Colombia, saying, oh, he said he's going to stand up, but he didn't. He folded like a house of cards. He did not fold. That's a misrepresentation, which tells us, again, we need independent media. People have to tell us what he said. This seems to be kind of serious. So I would urge any honest media, there aren't any, but if there were, to, when the president of Colombia speaks, and in response particularly to the Don of Mar-a-Lago, when he speaks to him, that his words be unedited and presented to the public of Canada and wherever else, so that what he's saying, as opposed to this smug, snide characterization of his opinions. But he said two things that are very important. The most important was, he said, well, okay, now we know. We have to diversify our trade, and we are open to trade with anyone. We're not going to be locked in to this Anglo system. He said, we're far too dependent on the U.S. This is the president of Colombia. And so he said, that's my instructions to my government officials. Go to work on this and make sure that we open our trade to all quarters of the globe. That's very important. That has not happened here, by the way. We'll come to that. That, of course, is also the position of the president of Mexico. But to come back to the president of Colombia, who's been badly misrepresented, in my opinion, the president of Colombia said that on this question of the Americans' government sending people to Colombia, he said, you're not going to treat them with disrespect. They are Colombians, and we will receive them because they're from our country, and we will treat them as welcome, and of course try to help them get reintegrated into Colombian society. But they are not criminals. He said, if you say they don't belong in your country, that doesn't make them a criminal. Trump wants to continually blares this thing about, oh, drug dealers, rapists, human traffickers, killers, murderers, etc. The people that he were transported and shown with their handcuffs and their chains on their feet and ankles, this is old school, super colonial thinking, the mindset of the ruling circles of the United States, and I have to say Canada as well. Is there something inferior and something just criminal in the nature of another people? So the president of Colombia addressed that. So he said, we'll send our own planes, and we will pick up these Colombians. We'll return them, but they're not going to be shackled. So to make street parlance is called a perp walk, where people are seen to be surrounded by armed men with masks, and they're creeping along, but they're in shackles. That's a disgrace. And he said, all you're trying to do is humiliate our country and humiliate our countrymen. He says, and we're not going to tolerate it. But instead, see, the Anglo media was giggling and smirking and pointing. He caved in. He didn't say he wouldn't take them. He said they have to be, we'll take them because they belong to us, and they'll be treated with respect. Now, the president of Mexico said the same thing, by the way. She made it very clear that there is equality of nations, equality of peoples, and you're not going to racialize this and think you're going to humiliate our people or our country. So this is very important psychologically. This is a great moment for Canadians to get readdress who they are. And on this program, we read Farley Mowat. And everyone, I would urge you, please read anything by Farley Mowat. Because Farley Mowat was very proud of his country. He was very, of course, he had served it and was in combat in World War II. And he kept to his principles throughout his life. And he remembered who we were allied with in World War II. So when politicians here decided to go on this crazy Cold War bent that has driven our populations insane on several occasions, he refused. I'm talking of Farley Mowat, the greatest author, in my opinion, that Canada has produced. He refused to accept the Cold War and political baiting of people who had served in the war, people who had fought the fascists, but who fell into disfavor because Washington decided it wanted to have a war or to crush the Soviet Union, China, anyone who disagreed with them. So this has been, this is a where we've been brought to. We should be refreshing our knowledge of Farley Mowat and of what he stood for, and to say it is time to end vassal thinking. I'll give you an example of vassal thinking. When the executive member of one of the greatest, most successful businesses on the earth, Huawei, was coming to Canada, the president of the United States, that was Donald Trump, said through his offices, he wanted her detained in Canada because they felt like accusing her of something in New York. And Canada complied. They conspired, because Canadian officials actually participated in anticipating her arrival. They knew she was passing through. She was on her way to Mexico. Donald Trump didn't dare call Mexico and tell them to arrest an executive of Huawei. They would have hung up the phone. They would have said, "That's our business. Nothing to do with you. If you want to charge her, that's your business. But that is not what we do. We're a sovereign country." However, you know, the ever able and in attendance and saluting lieutenant said, "Yes, of course. Yes, of course." And so they made sure that she was on the plane so that they could grab her. So that was, you might say, doing more than going a little further than mere assistance. They were showing due diligence and zealotry and carrying out the orders of none other than Donald Trump. He was the president, and it was his cabinet that decided that. And Canada did it, and of course they just blew up in the process a billion-dollar business that was functioning very efficiently and happily in Canada. There was no problem with that company, but of course it became a disaster. And that was the whole point. The whole point was to say, no, Huawei will not be in Canada because Donald Trump doesn't want it to be in Canada. Therefore, he will have you do something which will destroy it. And he did. And our compliant prime minister did it and saluted and all that. And you know what he got for a reward? Pow! A kick in the teeth. The big question is, have you learned anything from that? It isn't as yet evident. But on the occasion, the last point I'll make about that is that immediately when the arrest happened, I call it an arrest, they detained her and they put an ankle thing on her foot and made her stay in one house. And entirely unnecessary and stupid procedure. So CBC, that evening, the evening that we learned of it, they always have to call an expert. And so they called two or three people to put him on the air. And one of them, I'm sorry to say, I don't know his name, but he said, when they asked him, "Well, what do you make of this?" And he said, "Are we a vassal?" He said, "That's what occurs to me. Why would we do this without, you know, I don't understand. It's a business in Canada. She's not a criminal. We've never accused her of anything. We're happy with the relationship. So are we a vassal?" He asked that a couple of three times. Here's the point that struck me. That individual never appeared again on CBC. No one else ever after that used the expression vassal, because it was true. And so what we have now is a continuation of vassal thought. It's time to say, as the president of Colombia says, to diversify trade, trade with whom we please. As a matter of fact, put the banner up over the country and the banner would be free trade. And the Americans would recognize that banner because that was the slogan that they fought under in the War of 1812. They said free trade and free sailors. That was the war slogan because they were being told in 1812 that British ruled the seas and that they couldn't trade with France and Caribbean colonies of the British, and the French both had colonies there. So the Americans wanted to trade with some of those French islands, and the British said no. And they not only did they say no, they captured American sailors, seamen, of course, there, captured them, and made them serve in the British Navy. So the Americans were just completely infuriated and et cetera, went to war, and we all know about that. Except we don't, but at any rate, let's pretend we know about that. So they went to war in the name of free trade. And so Canada should say, not only, you know, stop the terrorists, but we'll trade with who we want to trade with. Guess what? There is a multipolar world emerging. And we should no longer be vassals. Think like vassals. You have to break, shatter it, get over it. Stop thinking like a vassal. Think of who we can trade with. And this particularly applies to workers. Remember that all over the world, these great corporations employ people, and those employees, those workers, should be uniting. And in Canada, there should be a meeting of the Canadian labor movement, of the labor leaders, and they should put down a little manifesto, a little doctrine. This is what we will require in order to resist the hegemonic dictatorial policies of President Trump. But instead, at the moment, we have labor leaders, if you can call them that, who can't even get out of bed to organize a meeting. To this day, they haven't said much of anything. Unifor, which is always "I yes sir" next to the Liberal Party, has said that they got to attend a couple of meetings. And you say, could you report back? What did you do? What did you say? And did they agree with you? No, we were at the meeting. That shows they think we're important. Yeah, they do. They think Unifor is important because it's not in the Canadian Labor Congress. It's not in the OFL. And it's been trying to set a little course all by itself. And that course has really been up the yazoo of the ruling class of Canada. That's all it is. And they're standing hat in hand next to the bosses and saying, yes, sir. And Hassan Youssef, who went through Unifor, then he went to the CLC, and lo and behold, the Liberals appointed him a senator. So he was there representing labor. I saw on the weekend a story. It was a CBC, and it said meetings of corporate leaders and unions have happened. I don't have the exact headline, but accept my characterization. It's accurate. The key word in the headline was that the unions were involved and were speaking out. So I read the article, and this goes back to my point about how everybody's talking like a duck that's been hit with a spoon. There was no union leader in the story. They said businesses and bankers and unions. And then I read the story looking for the union. There wasn't any. There was somebody, I forget his name, Flavio, or I think he's got his name right, who's actually a parts manufacturer. He's not in the union. He isn't a great admirer of Jerry Dias, who's long since sort of disappeared. The Toronto Star interviewed him as someone who could testify to the great qualities of the wonderful Jerry Dias. And so I guess the fact that they had once asked him to what his opinion as an parts manufacturer was, what his opinion of the current thing with the tariffs, they thought, well, he once praised Jerry Dias, so let's put him down as a union leader. That's all I can make of that. At the end of the day, it's just flat baloney, but it shows us how little labor actually exists in the minds of our capitalist press. And I hope you're comfortable with that term, because there's no socialist press. So there's just a capitalist press. And the papers are owned by very powerful companies and individuals who then tell us what we think. And that's very helpful of them. They've steered us into this mess with this damn vassal thought. I get a kick out of Polyev. He says, all right, well, now we're going to put Canada first, and we're going to build a military. Okay, that's a great idea. Are we going to make our own munitions? Are we going to make our own rifles, our own rocket launchers, our own fighter aircraft? How about a bomb? According to Winston Churchill in 1948, when he gave his famous speech in Missouri, he claimed that Canada had the knowledge for the bomb. To show you again, in this funny realm of vassaldom, Christian Freeland told us, we are under the American umbrella, nuclear umbrella. I don't know if she still thinks that. She changes her mind about every 3 months. It depends on how the wind is blowing in Washington. But at any rate, let's come back to this point. I said multipolar world, and this is one of the striking moments. We are in a curious situation. The Secretary of State of the United States, Marco Rubio from Florida, a Cuban anti-Fidel guy, his whole career has been in hating Fidel and hating Cuba, but he's now Secretary of State, and I hope you notice that everybody changes their opinion of what, once they get a job like Secretary of State. Tulsi Gabbard now has, I hope she gets a job, actually. I don't know if she's been confirmed. But at any rate, what they say is, I thought that yesterday, but now I agree with Donald Trump. And if you ask him what Donald Trump thinks, they say you'll have to ask him because I don't know. But Mario Rubio, bless his heart, gave an interview to Megyn Kelly. I'm surprised I know the name, but at any rate, she used to be with Fox News, and she now has a lot of clout because she's a Trumpite. Megyn Kelly was talking to the Secretary of State. The Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, said that the idea of a unipolar world is out of date. It's no longer true or workable. Please let that sink in. He said it. He hasn't repudiated it. He did say it. It was a long interview. And he said, we have to accept that we now are in a world, which he said, unipolar was a result of the end of the Cold War. He's quite right about that. When the Soviets collapsed, Bush, the larger, or the first Bush, announced that it was now America was number one, and that it was, of course, an exceptional country and was going to lead the world. And Rubio says, well, that is now over. He said he's not making it up that it's over. He's saying it actually is over. Whether he changes his mind or not, please use that as a marker for where we are. Perhaps in a day or two, Rubio won't even have a job. I don't know, because we're dealing with Trump. But That is the Secretary of the United States saying something which the leaders of other countries, Venezuela, Cuba, people want to say Russia, China. No. Countries of South America and of Venezuela and countries in Asia, countries in, we now know, in Africa. The African, there's a new leadership emerging in Africa, and they are saying loud and clear, we're not taking your dictation anymore. We don't have to go to Washington in order to have a meeting with somebody else from Africa. We have our own meetings. We make our own mind. And yes, we will deal with Russia. Yes, we will deal with China, because we don't have to accept American domination, hegemony, and same goes for the French, and same goes for the British. Forget about the British, but at any rate, that is now, it's actually happening. And the new Secretary of State of the United States said it. And this often happens in history, where someone will give a significant interview and odd things will happen following. However, the statement itself has to stand there. It's the same as the famous comment by Dwight Eisenhower when he said, look out for the military-industrial complex. I'm warning the American people, look out for them. It could be trouble. Now, it didn't stop it. It went on being the military-industrial complex. But that, because he was the outgoing president, he said that, it stayed in our consciousness, and people use it as a reference. So please use Marco Rubio's comment that the time is up for the unipolar world. And if we're going to be smart, we're going to have to deal with other parties, and we're going to have to be practical, which should be interesting. Americans claim to have invented pragmatism. I suppose they might have, because of William James, perhaps. But it's a nice word, and it would be a very refreshing thing if they did adopt these words like pragmatism and diplomacy, as opposed to diktat and gunboat diplomacy. But we will see. This is the Taylor Report. We're going to take a musical break. We'll come back and we'll talk to Brendan Stone in Hamilton.
Les aristocrates, on les prendra. La 300 ans qui nous promettent qu'on va nous accorder du pain. La 300 ans qui donne des fêtes et qu'ils entretiennent des catins. La 300 ans qu'on nous écrase, assez de mensonges et de phrases. On ne veut plus mourir de faim.
That's Brendan Stone, Hamilton Coalition, Stop the War, and Daryl, of course, he was an active participant in that NDP nomination process, which in Hamilton turned out to be sort of a Democratic. The people seem to be speaking. You know, Hamilton is a nation unto itself. They don't really just bend over because Toronto tells them to. So we're all learning little lessons here as we go. There's a shift, political shift going on in the world, and those people who stood up and condemned the horrendous attacks on the civilians population of Gaza, decimating attacks, and it was really a cry of humanity, really. That's all it was. It wasn't, you know, we don't like this guy or we hate this people, et cetera. No, they simply saw unbearable violence that was unnecessary and was illegal. And their politicians, of course, failed them because they were all looking over their shoulder at the great master and not at the listening to the people. We have had a spontaneous thing happening, which is interesting and could be very helpful. There were booing of the American national anthem at Ottawa, in the Ottawa NHL game, and I believe it happened at the Raptors game. I would urge sports fans and patriots, et cetera, of all countries, actually, to seize the moment to get rid of this use of the anthem to try to basically browbeat population. I mean, they won't, the people who like sports, but when you make them all stand and put their hands over their hearts and all that, you're actually coercing them. You're using kind of mob logic where if everybody stands and somebody doesn't, think of Mr. Kaepernick, for example, then, of course, they become targets of hatred and abuse. And it is, this came about with the First World War. They began to introduce the singing of the anthem. The Americans did, and I believe the British and others. They always made it an occasion where you had to show loyalty. And it's an imposition, and it could be gotten rid of, and everyone would be much happier. The reason you're at the game is you like the Toronto Maple Leafs or you like the Hamilton Ticats. You're not there because to show that you want to put your hand over your heart and say that you're loyal to the king, who, by the way, at the moment doesn't appear to be loyal to you. So we should just say this started with a war. It's a hangover from an ugly war that led to a second war. World War One led very naturally to World War II, and involved in it is jingoism and coercing ordinary people who are free to either sit, stand, or not sing. It's up to them. So we should actually say this is a good time to just get rid of these things, because it's a terrible marker and a carryover from wars. So just know that it started with, we had to do it because there was a war on. And as for Chuck III, I think this is a part of our new reality. Here is Canada talking about sovereignty. Our sovereign is a foreign, he's in England. The sovereign, he has our sovereignty. Everything we do has to have his initials on it. This is time to think about having a republic or a stronger declaration that we make our own decisions. It is really remarkable, have you noticed, that we belong to the Commonwealth. Not a peep out of the Commonwealth saying, hey, don't do that to Canada. Nothing from our king. You have to swear allegiance to Chuck III and his descendants to be a Canadian. And Charles Roach famously did not, would not, could not. So I thought how about the concept of mutuality? If you're loyal to the king, why isn't he loyal back? It's not a word. And we spent a lot of money running over to Britain and having the prime minister stand with his head down in front of the king. When we get into a jackpot, when we are in one, suddenly Chuck III is not around. Charles I was a louse, and Charles II was worse, and so I don't know maybe there's something, a curse on that name. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT. I remind you that Marco Rubio says we're in a multipolar world, so Canada better act like it, and Canadian labor ought to find a voice of its own, and they actually ought to meet with one another. That would help. We got to thank Pedro, who always does great work, and there's a good show. Great show coming up.
Wonderful town, wonderful people, places to go, things to see. They're all in Hamilton. That's my wonderful town. Beautiful homes, schools and churches, entertainment, places to shop. My heart's in Hamilton. That's my wonderful town. Center of the Golden Horseshoe, giant of commerce and industry.
Hamilton's a steel city, and of course you will listen to Radio CKOC.
Wonderful harbor, beautiful mountain,
botanical gardens, a sight to see. My love is Hamilton, that's my wonderful town. Hamilton's the hometown of the Ticats, Husky, Wee Wee, eat 'em raw. There's the farmer's mart, and for the young at heart,
Hamilton has CKOC.
You can ride across a beach trip on the Skyway.
At McMaster you can get a degree.
Out on the bay for a sail, or on the Mohawk Trail,
you can listen to CKOC.
In Burlington and Stony Creek and Dundas, from Toronto to Niagara Falls, Welland and Galt and Kitchener agree, they like Radio CKOC. There's only one Hamilton, that's my wonderful town.
Join us at CIUT Studio 2 every week for our live music series. Tune in to hear performances from established favorites and up-and-coming hidden gems alongside exclusive interviews. Next week, Canada's original surf punks, Mark Malibu and the Wasegas, will be joining us to play some oldies and some new unheard songs. Featuring an interview from the beloved Dr. Mouth, you're in for a real treat this Tuesday from 3 to 4 p.m.
Yippee! From the roots up,
CIUT 89.5 FM,
Toronto.